Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin. It's the NFL Insider Series, Familia. We are we're in the bottom 10, but we're saving so much goodness for you right here. And so I just want to make sure you're liking and subscribing us on YouTube, that Familia FFP page. You guys have been coming out and coming out and coming out. We've doubled our subscriber base. So proud of that. And it's all because of you. And I know it's because you guys love this NFL Insider Series. Also want to make sure you're going to underdogfantasy.com. When you use that promo code FAMILIA23, you're going to get matched up to the first $100 that you put in. So first deposit $100, they're going to match you an extra $100, and then you can do best ball drafts from here all the way till September 7th, kick off to the 2023 NFL season. And after that, you can do baseball, basketball, everything, all the sports. You could do daily contests, everything. It's all over the place. Underdogfantasy.com. So, Familia, I want to introduce Greg Bell, who covers the Seattle Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. I tell you, this is actually a shout out to amigo Cam Inman, who recommended that I reach out to Greg. And I asked him, you got anybody? He gave me one name, and this is the man. So I'm going to introduce Greg. Greg, muchas gracias for joining me here today.
Appreciate it. Cam's a good amigo of mine. Yeah, I've worked with him. I used to cover the Oakland Raiders for the Sacramento Bee, so I'm a Bay Area colleague of Cam Inman's for a long time.
Oh, man, the Raiders. Do you have a favorite story from covering the Raiders?
Oh, man, they usually involve Al Davis.
Yes.
actually, my favorite story is the year after the Raiders went to the Super Bowl with Bill Callahan in 2002. That was my first season covering them. And the year after that, they went 4-12, of course, and Callahan got fired. During that season, they played a game against Denver in the mud on a Saturday afternoon at the Coliseum in Oakland. I mean, just pouring rain, mud. And they lost the game because it wasn't the only reason, but they were down. They had a chance to get the ball back at the end of the game. They were forcing Denver to punt, and they were around midfield. It was 4th and 4, and the Raiders jumped off sides on the punt, allowed Denver the first down, and then they expired the rest of the clock and they lost the game. And after the game, Bill Callahan in the press conference and live streaming cameras for all the world here said, "We've got to be the dumbest team in America." And I loved it as a writer, but he'd had it. I mean, he was a first time head coach. He'd been over his head. Rich Gannon and Jerry Rice and Tim Brown and Charlie Garner had got him to the Super Bowl the previous season, but that second season was a disaster. So we go into the locker room at the Coliseum, up the stairs and into the back Coliseum locker room to home locker room, and the first guy the beat writers know to go to is Charles Woodson. And we knew he would have a genuine reaction to what his coach had just said. And we told Woodson what Callahan had said, and he didn't believe us. No, that didn't happen. So we had to actually play it back on the tape. These were back cassette tape days where I had to press rewind, not on the phone, but press rewind on the cassette tape and find the spot. It took a second. And we're all standing around Woodson's locker as I'm doing this. And I play it for him, let him hear it firsthand. And he hears it. He drops his head, Jorge. He looks up and he goes, I'm done with him. That man needs to be fired. You can quote that. And they went on to basically boycott the rest of the season. The season finale, they lost to the Lions in Detroit when they had no business losing to them. In San Diego, Jorge, at the end of the 2003 season, Woodson and the defensive backs did not want to go onto the field. They were going to boycott the game. It was a season finale. T. Martin was the starting quarterback for the Raiders. This is how old I am. T. Martin's a coach with a gray beard somewhere. The defensive backs were not going to go on the field. Torrey James and Woodson, I think, might have been injured at the time or at least malingering and didn't want to finish the season. It took Al Davis to go into the locker room or at the old Jack Murphy Stadium and convince the Raiders defensive backs to take the field so they could play the game. And they got boat raced and they lost, and Callahan was fired the next day. The Raiders, man, I was there for Romanowski taking his helmet off and punching and throwing it and hitting a teammate and getting cuffed and stuffed in the back of an Alameda Police Department cruiser, and the lawsuit that resulted in that. Oh, man, I got Raiders stories. That could be, this whole segment could be on the old Al Davis Raiders.
Oh, wow. Wow. This was not what I expected. So this is fantastic. Nice little change. By the way, my familia, this is my favorite background of any of my guests today. So anytime we get into nature, especially in the Pacific Northwest, is absolutely
exactly
fantastic.
You come July in Seattle, you got to be outside because you're not going to be outside from about October to May. So here I am.
Oh, mi amigo. So I want to jump into the season. Geno Smith was such a revelation last year. So many people in the fantasy community were just really ignoring ignoring him and kind of downgrading DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, especially. Came up over 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns. Yeah, he was also a rushing threat. And they've added to the offensive weapons. Can Geno Smith do it again?
Well, here's the deal on Geno Smith, Jorge. It's very possible that he has statistically a season that drops from last season. Yet the offense and the team is better. Why is that? Well, first of all, he's going to be hard-pressed to throw for almost 4,100 yards and 35 touchdowns and set four more single-season records. He broke three of Russell Wilson's season records last year. So that's the bar he has set. So if he doesn't get that, everyone's going to say, well, he had a down year. No, he actually had an extraordinary year for anyone, let alone his track record for 10 years. He didn't play a down he didn't make a start. He wasn't doing anything for years. I mean, he had one start for Eli Manning for the Giants in Oakland, by the way, a few years ago. And that was his only start over 7 years. So he went from not just not performing, but not playing for four different teams, the Jets, the Chargers, the Giants, and then the Seahawks for 3 years. He didn't play at all with Russell Wilson taking all the snaps and starts. And so the fantasy community, to be down on him entering this time last year, of course they were. There was a track record of 10 seasons that said he wasn't going to do anything remotely close to that. My point is, statistically, I don't think he's going to have as good a season because that was extraordinary for anybody, including Geno Smith. But now they have a different stable of running backs. They have a better offensive line. They may have a rookie starting center, fifth-round pick, Oluwatimi, who has – they're going to try to solidify a position that's been broken at center here for about 8 years since they traded Max Unger in 2015 for Jimmy Graham. They've got Kenneth Walker coming off of a 1,000-yard season as a rookie, and they got him some help with Zach Charbonnet, second-round pick from UCLA, who's going to get more touches and stats than some people might realize because they don't want Kenneth Walker to carry it 20-plus times a game. They don't want him to have 250, 300 carries. Because time and again, it's proven both in Seattle and the NFL, those guys get hurt. And then you end up scraping the barrel with waiver wire pickups and practice squad call-ups in December because you've run your running back too much. So that's why they drafted Charbonnet in the second round. So from a fantasy perspective, I'd look at Zach Charbonnet to get a lot of touches for Kenneth Walker to still run the ball the way Pete Carroll wants to. Now they have Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the rookie first-round pick, to be the true third receiver that they've been trying to get with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. The point is there's more places to go now offensively, more options both in the run game and the pass that I think is going to disperse some of Geno Smith's numbers out a little bit. I don't think he will have as good a statistical season, but I think the offense will be better overall, their offensive line. The two tackles that are coming back, Abe Lucas and Charles Cross from their rookie seasons, they're overall better equipped this time than they were this time last year.
Yeah, you know what? Just a quick, non-fantasy question. They really seem like they hit home runs with that 2022 draft where, I mean, you refurbished the offensive line, refurbished the defensive backfield, and all of a sudden it was just, Got to give them props for that one. That was a lot of really good picks. I want to focus on the running backs right now because you mentioned Charbonnet coming in, and I think a lot of people before draft day were looking at Kenneth Walker to be like, this bell cow, like you said, 300 carry guy. How do you see kind of like the carries/ targets to be broken up between the two of them?
Well, it's not a 1 and 1A. I mean, it is a clear number one with Kenneth Walker. But I would, if I had to put numbers on, they also have Kenny McIntosh, a seventh round pick from the University of Georgia, who's going to make the team and be a more of a situational back. And they still have DJ Dallas in the backfield coming back. He's been the third down back in recent seasons because he can pass block. So if Charbonnet and McIntosh, especially McIntosh, can prove to be pass blockers, which is the number one way for rookies to get on the field in the NFL, as you know, if they prove adept in training camp at pass blocking, then I'd say the split might be 60-25-15 or 60-30-10 between Walker, Charbonnet, and McIntosh. The point here is that Carroll has learned long ago that you cannot rely on one. You go back to the USC days and Lendale White, and when he split carries with Reggie Bush and how he wanted to cultivate running backs. And this team had 18 different ball carriers, Jorge, a few seasons ago. I think it set a record for the free world of how many guys touched the ball because of how many injuries they had. I mean, heck, they had Marshawn Lynch re-sign on Christmas Eve, come out of retirement. That's how much they need running backs around here. That's why they drafted two of them when they had a 1,000-yard rusher coming back. This time last year, Rashad Penny, of course, was the number one, yet he couldn't stay on the field because of injuries. He ended up getting hurt in early October last year. It was the only reason that Kenneth Walker got his chance. And then Walker got banged up in November, December, and was playing hurt a lot of that time. So fantasy people might say, why are they splitting? Why are they giving touches to Charbonnet and to McIntosh and not to Walker? And why is my fantasy – I drafted Walker high in the draft, and why is he only getting 15 touches? Because they want him to run the ball in December, and they hope January, and they haven't had a back be able to do that from September to January in a long time.
And you know what? I mean, I think the Browns have done a good job of that with Nick Chubb, just kind of keep preserving him and keep him on the field and not wearing him out. So I think that that's kind of the model. And he's been able to be productive into his second contract. So, I mean, you do that and you're right. Oh, man, you reminded me that Marshawn Lynch here, you reminded me of an old line I used to hear. I used back from when I used to work for the Dodgers is the old scout said, you never have enough pitching. You never have enough pitching in baseball. You never have enough running backs in the NFL. That's right. So you got to love. And now let's move over to the go outside the wide receivers. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. That's got to be one of the most talented trios of wide receivers when you look at that. Some people might think that Jaxon Smith-Njigba is kind of like that cherry on top, but I kind of see him as being an important player this year, not just a role player. And how do you see it?
They're going to go
the three of them.
Yeah, they're going to go more three wide receivers, Jorge, than they have maybe the whole time that Pete Carroll has been here 13 years. They went more three tight ends and two tight ends than anybody in the league last year because they didn't have a third wide receiver they could trust. Dee Eskridge, their top pick from a few years ago, is yet to stay on the field because of injuries. And they finally have given up on – I mean, there's still a role for him if he can stay on the field, Eskridge, but he'll now is a fourth or fifth receiver. And that's why they went and got Smith-Njigba in the first round. Yeah, he only played three games last year for Ohio State. He had the injury in the hamstring in the opener against Notre Dame and didn't play much last year. But he got drafted by that Rose Bowl against Utah a couple years ago when he had 15 catches and 347 yards and three touchdowns, set all kinds of records for that big game. That is when the Seahawks said, we're drafting this guy. And they've tried Josh Gordon. They had Latron Treadwell in here last year. They've tried a lot of dudes as third wide receiver for the last few years, and they can't find one. Well, now they have one. He looked like, and I know they didn't have pads on, no one's hitting him, but in the mini camps and OTAs, he looked like all that and a bag of chips because he catches the ball away from his body, first of all, which very few rookies do in the NFL. They tend to catch in here and they're unsure of themselves. He catches it way out from the frame of his body. Why is that important? One, because even when you're covered, you can still catch the ball before the defender because he can't go through your back. Also, receivers, DK Metcalf has had this problem. When you don't catch the ball out here and you tend to let the ball in your body, the ball tends to bounce off the chest plate of the shoulder pad for drops. Smith-Njigba doesn't – that's something that Doug Baldwin, I watched when I covered him, 5 years for him to perfect that. Well, Smith-Njigba's already doing it. He's also very smooth in his routes. He's more vertical speed than I expected him to. You're going to see a lot of him in varied ways. Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, is going to move him around in motion. They're going to have Lockett in the slot at times as well and put Smith-Njigba outside. his, depending on how quickly he assimilates, not the offense, he's got that, but NFL defenses and how they're playing him and looks and coverages and disguise coverages. If he can get that down, I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett numbers are going to go down because Smith and Jigba are going to go up. In the last couple of years, 1,100, 1,200-yard seasons for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett because they didn't have a third wide receiver. Well, now they do. And they have a guy who can probably catch and may catch 40-some, 30-some passes this year as a third wide receiver, which they have not had here in Seattle. So I could see Metcalf, much like I talked about Geno Smith, I could see Metcalf and Lockett having more effective and efficient seasons, but their numbers of catches and yards go down, maybe not even 1,000 yards out of each number.
Oh, man. I love the definitive outlook. I love this. That, just one last thing on the offensive side of the ball. Tight ends, any, you know, with three wide receivers and Charbonnet also, Charbonnet and Walker, and maybe even McIntosh getting some passes, are the tight ends going to, is there going to be much left over for any of the tight ends?
Well, you would think not. And you would think that the team that was the most multiple tight end unit in the league last year won't be so this year, but Waldron loves his tight ends. You'd know that from his Rams days and Sean McVay. So he's going to find ways to get multiple tight ends. They've got Noah Fant. They're paying him a buttload of money in the final year of his deal, guaranteed money in a fifth year option to throw him the ball. And he's more of a wide receiver tight end. Then they have Will Disley, who they really trust, former defensive lineman from the University of Washington. They trust him both throwing the ball and he can block. He's an inline blocking tight end that they need in this offense and the way Carroll wants to play. And then they have Colby Parkinson, a 6'7 matchup guy from Stanford who didn't know how to block and never blocked at Stanford. They just threw the ball up to him and he jumped and got it. He's learning to block in the NFL in this Seattle offense, but he's still a matchup guy in the red zone and third down that they can go to. So they would be foolish not to use the three tight ends. They're just probably not going to use them as often as they did last year. Of the three I mentioned, the numbers are going to go to Noah Fant, who's going to split out more often when they go four wide.
Outstanding. You talked a little bit about the offensive line, the tackles who are going into their second year. Anything else to add about the offensive line? You think they're going to be better? I mean, just a better unit overall, better against the run, better running or passing?
They stand to be better, Jorge, against passing or run blocking, I should say, because of Oluwatimi. He's 6'5", almost 350 pounds. That position, they've just neglected, flat, broken, neglected for years. They've penny-pinched, and they've converted defensive linemen and tackles and guards. And, well, they've had eight set different guys play that position in the last 8 years, and I think that's going to change with Oluwatimi. They have Evan Brown. They signed a cheap contract, just over $1 million for a veteran from the Lions who could play center but has also played guard. And the Seahawks are going to have a new starting right guard, too. Phil Haynes, a draft pick from a few years ago, is going to get the first crack at being the new right guard because the Seahawks cut Gabe Jackson, who was a turnstile for most of last season. So they are going to get better at right guard. I think they're going to get better at center. And I mentioned the two tackles coming back. Then they have Damian Lewis as the starting left guard. He's been there a few years, second-round pick from a few years ago from LSU. So they're younger, they're more athletic, and they're better than they've been in years on the offensive line. We'll see how good they are run blocking when they have to play San Francisco twice, because that's the roadblock in this division.
That really is. Those are bad men when it comes to, you know, run stuffing and everything like that. On the other side of the ball, last year, it was easy to run against this defense. Not good, not easy to pass against them. And I know they added to the defensive secondary. What is kind of like? How do they look shape up against the run and against the pass?
Well, we'll see against San Francisco twice in 3 weeks starting on Thanksgiving. But that's where they've spent all their energy and a lot of their money this offseason, Jorge, is in the front seven. They spent $51 million on Draymond Jones, a defensive end from Denver, second day of free agency, which they never have done in the Carroll Schneider regime. That's a lot of money and early in free agency that Seattle usually doesn't do. And they did it because they need a true edge, hand-on-the-ground defensive end. One of the big reasons they didn't stop the run last year was schematically. They went from Carroll's 4-3 to a 3-4. And in that 3-4, they decided to pressure off the edges and have edge pass rushers on there basically as their defensive ends. Stand up off outside linebackers, Uchenna Nwosu, an LA guy, former Charger. And then they brought Bruce Bourbon back out of mothballs to be the opposite edge rusher, along with Daryl Taylor, who failed at doing it on the left side. So they had two straight up the field edge guys, with really only two true defensive lineman inside. Al Woods was over the nose, and then they rotated another defensive tackle. There really were only two true defensive linemen on the field because the two outside linebackers were just D-lining to the quarterback on every play. And teams exploited that. I still remember Tom Brady. I was in Munich for the Seahawks-Buccaneers in Germany. The Buccaneers, Jorge, came into that game, the lowest-ranked rushing offense in the league, rushed at the fewest time for the fewest yards. And by the middle of the second quarter, they had more carries and more yards than they'd had in any game all last season. They were into a 21-3 lead because Tom Brady just kept changing every play call to a run. He had either ors at the line of scrimmage, and he just kept going run against a very light pass rush heavy box. And he went right at the two defensive tackles. So Carroll said, all right, we're fixing that. And I asked him right after the season, what are you going to do about having only two true defensive linemen on the field for your run defense? He said, we're going to fix that schematically. And what he's done is signed Draymond Jones to be a third guy. And they drafted Cam Young from Mississippi State to be a new young nose tackle, big guy. Mike Morris is a guy they drafted from Michigan who's a big outside edge rushing defensive end type. They've got guys now, Derek Hall, second-round pick from Auburn, young, fast guys who aren't afraid to put their hand on the ground and be edge stand-up or stalwart stand-up defensive ends against the run. So that's the test. Can the defensive ends actually be on the defensive line and not just straight up the field pass rushing? Bruce Irvin's gone into retirement. They brought Bobby Wagner back, as you know, and they signed Devin Bush from Pittsburgh, who has never been the same since an ACL after his rookie year, former first-round pick, 10th overall pick. So they have reloaded in the front seven. We'll see schematically if it works. There's Jamal Adams' situation, whether he can get back on the field from his torn quadriceps tendon from early last year. That's a tricky injury. If he does come back, they're going to go three safeties, Jorge. They're going to have Julian Love from the New York Giants. They signed this offseason, can play any position in the back. He's going to be back with Quandre Diggs, and they'd love to put Jamal Adams up closer to the line of scrimmage to be another run-stopping linebacker-type safety. So a lot of changes and a lot of moving pieces to stop the run because they aren't going anywhere in the playoffs and to the Super Bowl if they can't beat San Francisco and be better on the line of scrimmage.
Oh, fantastic. I love this. Oh, my goodness. You got me so pumped up for it. I know you got training camp starting up. I'm ready to go run through a wall right now.
So, need you. They need you, man. They need you at defensive end or tackle to run through guys.
I think I need to put on about 120 more pounds. Yeah, you might be bad if you're healthy,
but don't do that. At this stage in our life, we don't need to do that.
I'm good. I appreciate that. These gray hairs, though, yeah, they can't come up. They can't deal with that. But okay, so I love the energy that we've been talking about. This has been fantastic. I just want to close out with something even more fun. Mexican food, Familia FFB. I always ask my guests favorite Mexican food, and if you want to shout out anybody, I'll make sure to put their name on Twitter, so maybe they give you a free lunch.
That's pretty cool. I got some places down in LA there's a food truck right across from Staples Center that I absolutely love.
I know the one you're.
It's in a parking lot along Figueroa. It's on the east side of Figueroa, northeast.
It's always got a line.
Always got a line. My son and I hit it up the last time we were down there. When he goes to Whittier College, play soccer for them. If you can get me anybody who can do a homemade mole, I mean, mole is just estupendo. If you can do that, then you're on. I'm coming back. Those are hard to get right, I think, but. The ones we have up here, there's an El Camion taco truck right up the street from me. There's a couple taco trucks around Seattle, El Camion. Excellent mole. Fantastic. I would probably eat cardboard if I had good mole on top of it. So that's a challenge, though. I don't know if you know particular places in L.A. that is pretty good at mole, but I found that to be a discriminator between what makes a really, really good Mexican meal.
Oh, when it's homemade. Honestly, I got spoiled for life. My mom makes the homemade mole, and just, you know, she'll make it with chicken or something like that. And it's just, everything just melts, all of the chicken just melts right off, and, you know, put a little, grab a flour, not a flour, a corn tortilla, just roll it up. Nothing else. You just dip it in there and just like scoop up all. That's just the best way to have the mole. Oh my goodness, man. May have to make you, you know, when they play the Rams down here, I may have to have you make the trek up to Mama Martine's house. It's like 30 miles, but it could be an hour and a half.
That sounds like it's worth it.
Yes, it is worth it, mi amigo. Oh my goodness, Greg. Please feel free, plug anything you want.
Well, I'm at Twitter at thenewstribune.com/sports and travel with the Seahawks, go everywhere they go. And I'm on, as you nice kindly posted there, on Twitter at GBell Seattle. I'm also on a radio show every day in Seattle and KJR 93.3 radio and iHeart radio app Monday through Friday, pretty much starting, well, next week until January. So, yeah, I'm out there a little bit, but it's always great to talk to Jorge, to people about the, not just the NFL, but I appreciate you even asking about Mexican food and things outside of interest. I appreciate the opportunity of having me on. Thanks a lot.
Hey, I appreciate you jumping on with me, Greg. This was awesome. In Spanish, we would say un gran placer. Muchas gracias. This was fantastic. I'm gonna close up shop right now, familia. One more time. You know what? I know you love this episode. So, hey, I know you're going to give it a thumbs up. I know you're going to hit that subscriber button on YouTube. Por favor,
subscribe. Make sure you do that. He's doing good work.
Because I get great guests like Greg. Oh, mi amigo. And also one more time, you're going to underdogfantasy.com, use that promo code familia 23 if you want to do it in Spanish, and you're going to get matched up to those first $100. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter. Everywhere else, all the other socials, it's familia ffb. And yeah, you're going to see some more written content on some other sites coming up from me. So enjoy it. I'll be tweeting them out. So one more time to our invitado, Greg, muchas gracias for joining us, everybody. Muchas gracias for joining us. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.